What is up, folks? Welcome into Sports Talk Wednesday, January 7th. We've been talking a ton of Saints. We'll be getting into some of the audio from today's end-of-season press conference from GM Mickey Loomis as well as head coach Kellen Moore. Looking at the Pelicans right now in action in Atlanta, you can hear that game on the big 870 AM, and currently the Atlanta Hawks have a 44-31 lead over the Pelicans. There's about 10 minutes left in the second period there. Looking at today's game where guys weren't playing for the Pels, they had a few people out. You had no Trey, no Herb, no Jose, and no Sadiq tonight for the Pellies in the lineup, making things even tougher for the Birds in this matchup against the Hawks. They've now dropped 8 in a row. Really disappointing matchup last night where they had control in the third quarter and then things just fell apart. Charlie and I were kind of talking about it earlier about when you saw LeBron James just starting to tee up and hit those shots, you knew things were coming to a sad end for this Pels team. He just had that feeling of everything collapsing on them. And you throw in there, too, like basically a Luka Doncic circus shot that goes in. Just all kinds of bad vibes from that matchup, and really unfortunate because you look at it and Trey Murphy had a fantastic game, and well, unfortunately, he's not playing tonight to try and build upon another strong performance. You know, with these back-to-backs, Charlie, do you know of any kind of restriction with Trey Murphy and why he's not in the lineup tonight?
No, I don't.
I know Sadiq's dealing with an injury. Herb Jones obviously is just coming back, so I understand keeping him out. And it was mind-boggling to me when I saw no Trey Murphy this evening. And curious, what is exactly his status for this matchup and why he's out?
He went nuts in the third quarter yesterday. I mean, the Pelicans were in position to win that game, and they kind of wilted in the fourth quarter. And really, it started at the end of the third quarter. Like you kind of mentioned, LeBron started to get hot. I mean, the Pelicans were up double digits near the end of the fourth quarter or the end of the third quarter.
Yeah, because he wasn't even looking good to begin the game.
And then he gets the foul on Jose, shoots 3 free throws, which you can say what you will about that call. And it's not like it really mattered in the end, but there were a lot of moments where just like, really? I haven't seen NBA referees overturn a call in a month, and they overturned like 3. Against the Pelicans that ended up going in the Lakers' favor. But that's besides, once again, didn't really matter because the Lakers dominated down the stretch. And the Pelicans offensively, they've got to find it, Steve, especially in the clutch. We've talked about this before. They don't know what they're doing in crunch time. They just don't. I mean, the players have said that. This isn't, you know, a groundbreaking thing that I'm bringing up. Pelican fans, people that watch the Pelicans on a nightly basis know that when it gets down to crunch time, the team really kind of shrinks up. They kind of panic almost, right? And so down the stretch in that game against the Hawks, or against the Lakers, I'm watching the Hawks game, that's why the Hawks were on the mind. Against the Lakers, you're in the fourth quarter, and you're just jacking up 3 after 3 after 3, and none of them are going in. Change it up. Do something different.
You talk about jacking up. Jordan Poole, we mentioned this too off air, it's just how frustrating it is with him watching, because you forget shot selection. It just seems like if he's got it, it's going up.
It wasn't even just Poole. I mean, it was Herb trying threes late. It was Trey. I mean, Thiers. None of them were going in, and yet the Pelicans kept jacking them up. And this is a close game. During the stretch, the Lakers went on their run. I think the Pelicans were stuck on 90-something points, and it felt like they were stuck on 90 points for an eternity.
Yeah.
And it's at one point, I believe the Lakers had outscored them 28-12 in the fourth quarter. So, you know, your double-digit lead at the end of the third that you worked so hard to get just completely evaporates because you're playing bad offense.
Yeah, I'm looking, Charlie. The Pels had a 17-point fourth quarter.
Yeah. Bricked threes, turnovers, just poor offense in crunch time. It's been a consistent issue for this team. They don't really have an alpha that wants to take over down the stretch. I mean, you can't really ask that of your rookies either.
Well, I think Poole wants to take over, unfortunately.
Poole wants to take over, but I mean, Steve, we've joked. I don't know if he's shooting 5% from 3 in fourth quarters. He'll jack them up. He'll put them up, but they don't go down. I mean, this Pelicans team, like I said, they really do kind of crunch up when it gets to clutch time in these really close games. And something's got to change, man. It's been rough to watch. And right now, with this matchup against the Hawks, I don't even know if we're going to get to crunch time in this game. The Hawks were 10.5-point favorites. They're already covering that in the first half. The Pelicans, so far through the first quarter and a half, Steve, they look like a team on the second night of a back-to-back. They're missing a couple key pieces for this matchup, obviously.
How's our old friend Dyson Daniels doing this evening for the Hawks?
Okay, here's my kind of hot take about Dyson.
Okay.
He's still rudimentary offensively. Great defensive player.
Sure.
Like, the Great Barrier Thief, by the way, is one of the all-time nicknames. I'll give him that. But if you watch him play, he still dribbles with his head down. He's never looking up. He still has so much developing to do. And to his credit, he said himself that he works on defense. He knows his craft. He knows what's going to get him paid. He knows what's going to have a long NBA career for him, like someone like Tony Allen, right, is who I think of. A shutdown defender that really just has a long double-digit career where not being a very good offensive player. I don't think his offensive game has really evolved at all since going to Atlanta. The numbers will go up, but his minutes have also gone up since he left the Pelicans. So,
yeah, I'm looking here real quick. He's got 9 points, 4-7 shooting, a rebound, 4 assists, and, yeah, like I said, 9 points for Dyson Daniels.
His revenge game against the Pelicans. Yeah, so we'll keep everybody updated until we get off the air at 8 o'clock. But as of now, it is Hawks 47, Pelicans 33, about midway through the second quarter. That game is on the Big 870 AM.
And just got word from our Odyssey folks. We are going to have the great Nick Friedell joining us tomorrow, breaking down all things NBA. It's been a while since we got to talk to Nick. We're texting a little back and forth last night with him.
Yeah, we shot him a message, and he kind of had a joke with us about the Pelicans' 8-30 record right now. So
he was having a drink for us.
It should be a fun interview. Not a fun season. A fun interview with Nick, kind of breaking down the season so far. And really what's next, because in all honesty, Steve, that trade deadline is ticking mighty close. I know that there's a few dominoes that need to fall. It sounds like...
It's amazing, though. I feel like I haven't heard a lot of buzz around people coming after Pel's players.
I think that there will be a market for some of these players if the Pelicans decide we want to move on, completely blow up, build around our two rookies, and get as many picks as possible for some of these veteran pieces.
For the longest time, I was worried. I'm like, man, somebody's going to be coming for Sadiq Bey.
I mean, Sadiq Bey's value right now might be the most that it will ever be.
I think so.
So I love Sadiq and what he's provided to this team. But at the same time, you're 8-30. So if a team wants to give price, Joe Dumars and Troy Weaver should have the phones ready for any potential offers that are going to come within the next basically month and a half, Steve. So that will be something that we'll talk with Nick
about. Deadline's the beginning of February, right?
I'll get the exact date. I know it is in February. It's around the All-Star break. So it feels like the first domino to fall is going to be Trae Young from Atlanta.
Right.
And then we'll see what happens with Giannis in Milwaukee.
I feel like the Trae Young talk, too, that's been like ongoing.
Yeah, it's going to happen. I mean, it sounds like the Wizards are going to make a move for him.
And do you think that Giannis Antetokounmpo ends up like going to the San Antonio Spurs?
I have no idea. February 5th.
Okay.
So the trade deadline is less than a month away, which means if you're the Pelicans and this team continues this losing skid and they cannot find their feet after, you know, we kind of had a glimpse of hope with that five-game winning streak, but now you're on an eight-game losing streak. And if you drop tonight, it's going to be 9. So,
the biggest thing with the trade deadline, too, obviously, is what is going to be the story with Zion Williamson. You know teams are going to come after him, I believe at least. And what are they going to offer, though, for him? Can you get a decent return?
No, we'll see. We'll talk with Nick about it tomorrow as well. Nick has been preaching to the choir for a long time about Zion.
Sure, he's like, you're not going to win anything with him.
Exactly. But I think it's going to be an interesting next month because at this point, with that record that they currently have, and I was talking to last night about, you know, the Western Conference isn't as deep as it's been in years past, where the current 10 seed, the Grizzlies, are, I think, 16-20, which isn't a good record either, but you're 8-30. It would take a monumental kind of second half of the season to really get back into the thick of the play-in stuff. So, yeah, I don't see why you wouldn't at least entertain potentially making some trades. And
there's just nothing that makes you believe that this team's going to be able to climb from the depths of the Western Conference to be a playing contender. Come on, let's be real.
They would have to double their winning streak that they already had. That was already shocking that they went on a 5-game streak. You're like, oh, are they starting to build something here with Borrego?
Sure, I get it. Mathematically, sure, it's possible. Let's do realistically, though.
Yeah, so I don't think it's realistic that they're going to double the winning streak that they had just a couple of weeks ago just to try getting back into the thick of things. So, I don't know. It's one of those situations with now a first-year president of basketball operations, inherited a lot of pieces. And if you're Dumars and you see where this team has gone, and you've not been absolved of some of the moves that you've made either, by the way, since coming here this past summer.
Maybe you can get us back a first-round pick.
Get us back into the first round of this upcoming draft, at least. If not, get some extra picks as well for some pieces moving on at the deadline, which, once again, February 5th, less than a month away, Steve.
Tick, tick, tick. We're going to take a break right now here on Sports Talk. When we get back, we're going to get into some more of our Saints talk and hear from GM Mickey Loomis as well as head coach Kellen Moore right here on WWL Saints Radio. Back after this, folks. Who dat? Welcome back into Sports Talk, folks. We are here getting ready for some audio from Kellen Moore and Mickey Loomis, who spoke today as the Saints had their end-of-season press conferences. Before we get into that, just want to give you another update on the Pelicans score. You can hear the game over on 870 AM right now. Hawks up 57-42, about 4 minutes till the half over in the ATL. Back to the black and gold. We know that a lot of hope going into next season with this team. We saw them win four of the last five games. The rookie quarterback seems to be the guy of the future for them, and the new head coach in place. Everyone's rallying around the voice of Kellen Moore. Mickey Loomis, Kellen Moore addressed the media today. Here's a little bit of it. I chopped it down. You heard it earlier here on Sports Talk 11 a.m. We had it live for you. Here is a trimmed down version with some of the juicy parts that you can hear. Kellen Moore, Mickey Loomis, right here on WWL.
Is there a balance to strike between having like a young team, a young core, but also like an extremely winnable division? Like, how do you like fall on those things between like building the young core versus like you can win the NFC South possibly, you know, next year?
Yeah. Well, I think all of us, you know, every guy with every team, whether it's a coach or GM, thinks, you know, they have a vision for how they can win their division, regardless of how strong or weak, you know, you may think it is. So we're going to approach it the same way. Hey, how do we improve enough to win the division? And we don't want to just win the division. I mean, we don't want to be an 8-8 or 8-9 winning team in a division. We want to win the division, be dominant, and have a chance to make a run in the playoffs. So that's what our goal is going to be.
Without knowing like your full history, I mean, it's been at least a very, very long time since you're like building around a rookie contract, a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what sort of advantages does that give you from your perspective?
Yeah, it's just easier to manage your resources. I don't know if it's easy. I don't know if easier is the right word, but you have some leeway to manage resources a little bit. But you still have to make really good decisions. Yeah, you know, I think it's pretty well documented that teams that have a quarterback on a rookie deal have been able to do some things and have some success. And so part of that is just building your roster and managing it over, you know, the 2-3-4 year period that you're facing. And it's just a different equation. It's a different math equation, really.
Mickey, along these team-building lines, I mean, we've had this session so many years in the past where you don't like the word rebuilding or like the complete teardown or whatever. Did you adjust, like, your willingness to embrace that? I mean, there were obviously some signs trading Rashid Shaheed, trading for Jalen Polk, mm-hmm. all the rookies who played and stuff. Did you find yourself even leaning more into that than you expected?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I would say that's true.
And what led to it and what did you like about it, I guess, as you were going through it?
Yeah, I think the beginning of that was just Derek not being able to play this year. You know, that's the beginning of it. And then, you know, you look at, okay, we're going to have a young quarterback and there's going to be a lot of development. And so how can we develop the rest of the team along with his development so that, you know, we marry this timeline of his improvement and the things that we're going to need to be able to do to support him, you know, with a really good defense, with, you know, a good run game. So those are the kinds of things you keep in mind.
And I know about along those lines, Kellen, was it always your coaching philosophy to play guys like Quincy Riley and Danny Stutzman and Jonas Sanker as early as you did? Or did that come from conversations about, hey, this looks like the direction of this team right now?
I think the important thing about that is that those guys were ready when the opportunity presented themselves, and no timelines are going to be the same. You know, felt like, you know, Tyler's development was a great example of that, of his willingness to get better through an entire season. You know, Quincy kind of had an opportunity through injury to hop in there. Danny kind of was a guy that I think is a great example, just being a really talented player that we feel great about and find different roles and different opportunities where he can get on the field. And so a lot of these timelines were different, but I think it was important to see these guys play and have exposure. And I thought a lot of these guys took advantage of the opportunity.
How did you see Kelly just kind of grow and develop as a coach?
I haven't thought about it in that term, but listen, I think he's done an excellent job. And under some really difficult circumstances, you know, we hired Kellen under a set of circumstances relative to the quarterback, and then that changed dramatically. And, man, he didn't bat an eye. He just, okay, what's the next step that we have to do, and how do we attack it? And that was impressive right from the beginning. And then during the course of the season, obviously there's circumstances and things that come up during the course of the year that you can think you're prepared for, but you're really not because you haven't been put in that position. And I think in virtually every case, he handled it really well. And so that's been exciting to see.
Anything from the season that was super instructive for you? Was there any sort of stuff you went through this year where you kind of identified, like, I need to change my process here or anything like that?
Oh, no question. I think that's the beauty of what we're going through right now is you know, Mickey's kind of alluding to this whole offseason process. It's just a really awesome opportunity to grow as a team, certainly myself individually, to just go back through the entire season, our entire process from the offseason program to how we went through the draft process, all the way leading into the season. And so there's definitely opportunities to grow, get better. I feel like credit to our guys, again, like we've said a lot, the people that we have in this building are really special. And I think that's certainly the foundation of this, you know, from the connection between the personnel department, the coaching, everyone else that works in this building from a day-to-day process, the players, the buy-in, the connection, I think is really, really special. And so if you start there and just keep getting better, we'll be on the right path.
How much does that help you to just know that you can brainstorm around pieces that the ones that you have now are going to be there? Because I assume that changed on you last year, too, that you're kind of envisioning one thing and you have to adjust. Like, just knowing some stuff settled, like, does that help you just with what you're doing?
I think it's a great opportunity in the offseason to have some solidified, you know, guys in place that, you know, certainly you can build around. And I think that's what's great. You know, we have a season of plenty of highs and lows, a lot of good film out there, a lot of good things that we can improve on. And we get to go through this thing collectively as a group and kind of paint the picture of what this thing needs to look like moving forward. And so, you know, coaches certainly will do a lot of that. Players will be a part of that process as we go through this. And there's a lot of excitement around that.
Last year when you got hired, singled out certain players, and Alvin was one of them. Mm-hmm. Do you still have the same belief? You know, obviously people say, oh, we're running back over 30, and what's happened in the last 2 years, is it more injury and circumstances? Like, do you still have the same belief in Alvin?
Yeah, I love Alvin. What Alvin's meant to this organization has been awesome. He's come in, he's put in a ton of work. Obviously, these seasons all take different paths, and, you know, he's had to navigate an injury. And so, you know, the most important thing for him is just to get healthy and be back to his self. And so, you know, he's done a really good job of leading this group and providing that leadership. And so, you know, excited for him.
What are your impressions of Mickey overall of the rookie class, the way that Quincy stepped up, the way that Devin, but even so, he was Tyler Shuck, Kelvin Becks, and everyone included?
Yeah, I think all of us would say we're pretty excited about the group as a whole. The things that they did, sometimes under different circumstances, Kelvin coming in, moving right to left tackle. You know, he had some really good flashes during the course of the season. Obviously, there's room for improvement. Tyler, what he's done, you know, that's been the focal point, I think, in the media about Tyler, but what Jonas Anker and even Devin Neal coming in, Quincy, Danny Stutzman. I mean, all these guys have really stepped up and done a great job. They've been professional about the way they've approached their craft. Even Vernon Broughton, who, you know, we didn't get a chance to see a lot of because he got hurt pretty early. I think we're excited about his prospects. Maliki at tight end. Fidel, I mean, all of them, just to a man, I think we're really excited about this class and have a lot of high hopes for them going forward.
It was one of your better classes in a while. Was there anything that you identified in your process to give those players that changed from how you guys were doing things, or is it, you know, the introduction of the new coaching staff to get their input with, or do you think kind of led to a better hit rate on?
Yeah, look, we've had some really great classes, you know, 2006, 2017 come immediately to mind, but there's been some other ones as well. So, you know, it's going to, you know, you're gonna have years where, man, it seems like everyone's working out and doing well. And this is early. You know, we shouldn't be judging our draft class after 1 year. We need to wait a few years, but we're pretty optimistic at this point. And, you know, some of that's circumstantial, like, you know, Jonas got his opportunity, Quincy got their opportunity because of injuries and circumstance. And so sometimes, you know, you have years where you have draft picks that don't get those opportunities, and so it takes a while for them to be able to perform. So, but we're excited about it is the bottom line.
How would you describe working with Brandon Staley and the job he did, especially once Chase Young came back in the second half of the season?
Yeah, I just give a ton of credit to our defensive staff. You know, you can see the improvement, like Mickey was saying, throughout the season. Their ability to connect, you know, it was a staff that a lot of people from different places. And so getting together and coming together and getting alignment, I thought was critical. And I thought they just did an excellent job of that. And their adaptability. I thought they did a really good job as the season progressed. Adaptability, willingness to adjust, you know, based off kind of matchups and personnel and all that fun stuff. But we got a bunch of really good people, and so I felt great about it.
Several players, veteran or otherwise, have kind of expressed a desire to be a part of what's being built here. What does that mean to you, and how did you go about creating sort of that environment that players want to be a part of?
Yeah, no, I certainly think it comes down to people. It comes down to having really, really good people in the building, which certainly I think from an evaluation process we've just put a ton of emphasis in for a number of years, and that's allowed us to have the type of locker room we have. And then just the consistency of how our players, how our coaches, how everyone operates from a day-to-day basis, I think hopefully it creates an environment that allows everyone to be their best.
Calvin, Cam DeMar have already said they want to play in 2026. Have you talked to Taysom about whether he wants to play in 2026 or retirement possibility?
We'll talk through all that process. I think for all these players, I think the goal really is, you know, I'm just appreciative of their work. That's the most important thing. And then the offseason is the offseason for a reason. You let the emotions get away from all these seasons and all that sort of stuff, and then take some time. And, you know, we'll have plenty of discussions, you know, with everyone.
What is kind of the timeline for y'all's sort of evaluation process this year? I know you usually kind of take a week away, and then how do you plan to do it?
Yeah, same. We're going to, you know, get the next 10 days, and I think Kellen's letting his staff, you know, take the next 10 days or so. They'll come back and we'll walk through the evaluations, their evaluations of the players, and then from that we'll start generating our off-season plan.
Mickey, what role do you think, like, patience and not being overly reactionary has played in building this thing, like, possibly three times now over the last couple of decades, like, just not overreacting to the noise and giving guys time to do their job and grow, and maybe not even, like, pushing, like, hey, you got to get the young quarterback in there like some teams do, like, how much do you think that helps with building this organization?
How much does it help? I don't know that I can answer that. That's just, you know, that's really, I probably am overly patient. sometimes your greatest strengths become a weakness. And so I'm really patient, I feel like. And, you know, whether it helps or not, hopefully it does. I think it does. But, you know, I'll continue to be that way. I, again, we're excited about Tyler. You're all excited about Tyler. We're excited about Tyler. But we have to remember that he hasn't had 17 starts yet. And so we're going to go into next season with these high expectations. And there's nothing wrong with that. But we also have to temper that by the fact that he's a second-year quarterback and he's had less than a full season of starts. So we got to keep that in mind as we go forward, that, you know, there's building blocks here. And we cannot skip any steps.
That was a little bit of what Kellen Moore and GM Mickey Loomis had to say today at the Saints end of season press conference. And there's a lot of optimism, obviously, around the black and gold right now, winning four of the last five games in the season. You have that rookie quarterback to build upon. And, you know, they got still going to go through the evaluations. You heard them talking about the fact that they're going to take a little break, let things, you know, digest, and then come back in about 10 days and start doing their player evaluations. Before getting ready for NFL draft talk. And I know we've been already dissecting a bunch of stuff with the draft and getting things together, looking at everything. And I don't know, Charlie, you know, to me, that for at least draft pieces, I've been all over the board on what I want them to get in the round one. And I don't know, running back is not at the top of my list for that first round pick, no matter how much people keep gushing over the guy Jeremiah Love out of Notre Dame.
Here's what I would say, Steve, and this is super early. I mean, this is January 7th, that we're 3.5 months away from the draft. I mean, we still have Senior Bowl, we still have Combine, we still have all of, like, the pre-draft stuff to do. I've talked with Mike a little bit about this. I like the top three edge rushers. I think any of them would be awesome. And I think they're all going to be top 10 picks. Now, the question is, are they all gone by pick 8? That's where it gets kind of interesting. Top three edge rushers, by the way, as I'm mentioning, Ohio State's Arvell Reese, which is probably going to be the first one off the board. Miami's Reuben Bain, still in the playoffs. You can get to watch him tomorrow night.
I don't know if he'll be around either.
We'll see.
Yeah.
And then David Bailey from Texas Tech.
Possibly, right.
I think there's a drop-off as far as – it's a talented edge class. And once again, very early in the process, we'll talk more about it. It's a really good edge class. But there's a gap after those top three guys, I think. And so if you can get one of those three premier edge rushers at pick 8, I think you're very happy with it. Then the conversation becomes Jeremiah Love, Caleb Downs. Jeremiah Love, obviously the running back from Notre Dame. Caleb Downs, the safety from Ohio State.
Yeah, I'm big on Caleb, so I lean heavily that way.
There's something about having potentially a safety room of Caleb Downs and Jonas Sanker for the foreseeable future and just not having to worry about that position for like the next decade.
Right.
That's intriguing to me. But is he going to be gone? Steve, with this draft class, the way that it is, I think just like Justin Mello from the Draft Network told us yesterday night when we had our interview with him, the Saints are in a really good spot at 8. There's a drop-off, and it's around 20. So even if they wanted to potentially trade back, which Mickey Loomis never does.
Sorry, and I'm laughing.
We say it every year. Oh, are the Saints going to trade? No, I don't think they're going to because they're in a good spot at pick 8. And if you can land one of those edge rushers, I think you feel really good about yourself. If all three of them are gone by then, you know, you can have the conversation about one of the top receivers because I think three of those are going to go in the top 10 to 12 picks as well. You can have a conversation about Jeremiah Love. You can have a conversation about Caleb Downs, like I mentioned. The one thing is for certain, if Dante Moore, the quarterback from Oregon, enters the class, the top two picks in this draft are going to be quarterback. And I don't think the top two players in this draft are quarterback, which is great news for Saints fans because that means they don't need to worry about QB. You feel good about Tyler Shuck in the future there. And you're going to get one of those top five or six prospects in this class fall into your lap at pick 8. And I think that's why the Saints, like I said, are in a very good spot. And like Justin Mello had said yesterday from the Draft Network, are in a really good spot entering April.
As much as fans might not want to hear about it, I'm curious, like, would the Saints go again in the first round getting an offensive lineman? Because, you know, we've talked about the interior of this O-line, whether it's them getting a guard or them drafting another tackle and moving someone to guard.
Day two.
You don't think first round?
I think if you're using a top 10 pick, unless you're talking about Quentin Nelson, which is, I think, the last top 10 guard. Tyler Booker was kind of close. The Dallas Cowboys drafted him at around 12, I believe, this past year in 2025. But you just don't really spend a top 10 pick on a guard. Now, you could spend day two picks on guards. And I think there might even be a couple guards that go on the back end of day one. But, you know, if you're drafting an offensive line, I guess you would potentially have to move one of Banks or Fuanga again, which I just don't think you're going to do. There's a couple offensive linemen that are going to be up there as well, Steve, that may go ahead of the Saints at pick 9 too, as far as tackles.
Right.
Utah's Spencer Fano, the right tackle, a plug-and-play type of guy. Francis Malgoa from Miami is going to be a top. I think he's probably going to go anywhere from top 5 to top 15, somewhere in that range, 5 to 15. So if those guys go early too, shockingly enough, you're probably going to have one of those top-tier edge rushers fall into your lap at pick 8.
Real quick, we are at halftime in Atlanta, Charlie, and the Hawks up 65-53 over the Pellies. Looking at the record for the Pellies this year, just 2 wins on the road of their 8 on the season. They're going to have to do some work here in Atlanta if they want to make a charge. But like I mentioned, you don't have a guy like Trey Murphy tonight. That definitely hurts this offense.
No Trey Murphy.
He's
no
dealing Herb with Jones. A back issue. I was wondering what back his problem issue. Was.
No, he carried the load last night. So right. That's probably
that's why it hurts.
Right. No Trey Murphy. No Herb Jones.
No Jose.
No Jose for this
no
matchup.
No Sadiq.
It's not really shocking necessarily. I guess we'll see if they can make a second half surge, but I don't know, Steve. At this point, I know the Vegas had set the line at 10.5. I feel like people that had taken the Hawks in this matchup are probably feeling pretty good right now.
Yeah, at the break right now, no surprise, Zion Williamson, the leading scorer for the Pels with 13 points. against the Hawks, down 65-53 at the half. Pelly's trying to make a rally. You can hear that game over on 870 AM. We're going to take a break, coming back with more of Sports Talk right after this on WWL. Do you listen to WWL on the Odyssey app, folks? If not, you gotta join the club. We've seen big growth in listeners who stream their favorite shows on their phones and who download our daily show podcast. You can stay connected to WWL for the latest on the Saints and LSU plus opinions. You just can't get anywhere else. Download the Odyssey app today and make sure to go to My Audio, then Settings, and turn on notifications. That way you'll never miss a big story or our red-hot interviews. WWL always live and free on the Odyssey app. We're stepping away. Coming back to wrap things up right after this on Sports Talk on WWL. Third quarter action in Atlanta. It's the Atlanta Hawks 69 over the Pelicans 53 at the moment. 10 minutes in the third. We'll keep an eye on that as we get ready to shove off. You can also listen to that over on the Big 870 AM. Man, oh man, Charlie, tomorrow when we're on the air, there's going to be college football playoff action going on. A 6:30 kickoff, Miami and Ole Miss. Definitely looking forward to some of that.
I know we're going to be doing pick six tomorrow, Steve.
Yeah.
We're doing it in the 5 o'clock hour, right?
Right.
Listen, the Miami line has gone out of control. It initially, I think, opened up at Miami minus -1. So it was a pick 'em. Do you like Ole Miss in this game? And after Trinidad Chambliss and the Ole Miss offense just electrified the college football world by upsetting Georgia in the Sugar Bowl down here in New Orleans, or do you think that Miami, who just smoked Ohio State in the, I think it was the Cotton Bowl, right, out in Arlington, which team do you think is going to be playing for the national championship? It was a pick 'em. A ton, and I mean a ton of money must have come in on Miami. That line is now Miami minus -3.5. We talk about this all the time. The difference between even 2.5 and 3 and 3 and 3.5 is gigantic. Same thing with 6.5, 7, 7, 7.5.
It's really surprising considering what Chambliss did in that last game.
I think people realize that Miami is beating these opposing teams up front.
Yeah.
Like offensive, defensive lines, they're just bullying teams. So I think it's going to be fascinating to watch. We'll share our picks tomorrow during pick six. Steve, I'll leave you with this. I think this is a fun stat. The Panthers this season had a minus -69 point differential this season, 23rd in the NFL. This is via NFL researcher on social media on Twitter. The only playoff teams with a lower point differential was the 2004 Rams at minus -73, the 2011 Broncos at minus -81, and the 2010 Seahawks at minus -97. Each of those previous three went on to win the wild card round.
Wow.
Yeah.
So don't just count out the Panthers as being one and done, you're saying.
The Panthers were 10.5 point underdogs. I think that's down to 10 now. I'm pretty sure. We'll have to see. I have it on.
You just know the Rams are coming into this matchup.
No, it's still 10.5.
Ready to roll.
It's still 10.5. That's what the number we'll be using for pick six tomorrow. The Rams are a lot of people's favorites to come out of the NFC because of the Stafford thing. You trust the quarterback.
Stafford, Devontae Adams, and Puka Nacua, yes, please.
All I'm saying is that's a really fascinating trend for these quote-unquote bad teams that sneak into the playoffs by winning a bad division. I don't necessarily sleep on Carolina, as Bobby was kind of alluding to in the last hour.
For Charlie Long, I'm Steve Geller. Thanks for tuning into the show tonight, folks. We will be back tomorrow. Got a lot on the palette for you, so make sure you lock in, tune in. We're here 4 to 8 on Thursday. Have a great night, everybody. Hope them Pelicans can pull one out in Atlanta so the losing streak doesn't extend. We'll be back with more Thursdays. Have a great night, everyone. Hoodad.